Welcome to Posture with a Purpose. My name is Bridget Quibido, and I'm a practitioner of the Feldenkrais Method. The talks and movement explorations in this series were presented as part of a Feldenkrais Method Awareness Through Movement workshop. And while these lessons and lectures were originally presented in a weekend format, I invite you to structure your own experience of this series in a way that works for you. So whether you immerse yourself in a weekend of awareness through movement, or whether you spread the lessons out over a number of days or weeks is really up to you. Before we begin, I do want to tell you a little about what you'll be doing. This approach, the Feldenkrais Method approach to improving your posture, may be different from anything you've experienced before. As a Feldenkrais Method practitioner, I use movement as a learning tool. So I use the exploration of the possible ways a person can move and attend to themselves as a means of revealing that person's possible responses to being in the world, their possible responses to gravity, their possible responses to their personal history, and their possible responses to their present environment and circumstances. Dr. Moshe Feldenkrais said, "Movement is life." And it's true. Whether we're looking at a human being or a single-celled amoeba, movement is life. The way we move or our movements represent our strategies for staying alive, our conscious and unconscious processes for getting nourishment and nurturing, for breathing, cleansing, reproducing. Movement is life. But I want to make something very clear from the beginning. The Feldenkrais Method isn't about movement or about improving movement. In practicing the Feldenkrais Method, we use movement as a means to improving the human experience. And I think it's important to be clear about this because I never know what to say when people ask me if I'm a movement teacher. I get these visions of drum circles and improvisational dance. And that isn't what I do at all. I have an appreciation of those things as being beautiful and healthful and valuable, but that isn't what I do. So what I've started saying when someone asks if I teach movement is, no, I don't teach movement. I teach people. And people are complicated. People are complex organizations of energy and matter. We sense, we think, we feel, we act, all at once influenced by our multidimensional nature and a multitude of interconnecting systems and subsystems. We're at least at a stage in our cultural evolution where most people will acknowledge that body, mind, and spirit are related. But the point I'm trying to make is that they're not merely related. They're simultaneous happenings. If we so much as try to talk about body alone, this pain in my arm or leg, we're not only addressing anatomy, the skeletal and the muscular system, but neurology as well, neurotransmitters, learned movement patterns, and sensory perception, which are influenced by environment, by memories, by emotional habits, and well-practiced behaviors, all of which grow out of and reinforce worldview and spiritual beliefs. All of that if I so much as talk about the arm or leg of a living person. So it isn't productive. It actually isn't even possible to decontextualize any one component of the complex organization that is a human being. One aspect of the human experience, body, mind, spirit, movement, feeling, belief, can't be removed from the context of the whole person functioning in the world. A look at any one system will always reveal the inner workings of another, and an integrated shift in any one level of organization won't leave unchanged any other part of the whole. Which explains why someone with a physical illness can find themselves healed by their faith in God. Why bodywork might bring about relief from an emotional trauma. And why talk therapy can help relieve muscular tension. I say all of this to say that the program you're about to begin isn't designed to improve the way you move. That's just a perk. It's a happy consequence. But it isn't the intention of the work. It isn't my intention as a teacher. You won't be told the correct way to sit or stand. You won't be given objective guidelines for more efficient sitting or standing. Because to improve sitting and standing as independent actions in and of themselves would be meaningless. Sitting and standing are meaningless without addressing the organism engaged in the act of sitting and standing, and the environment they're sitting and standing in. So a series of lessons about sitting and standing would be meaningless. You'll be happy to know that's not what you're signed up for. This isn't a series of lessons about sitting and standing. This is a series of lessons about getting to know yourself better. I have this client who grew up with a mentally unstable father. This client was raised by his mother, and his mom always told him that he was her rock. I don't know what he was like when he was younger, but by the time I met him, he was a really good rock. He sat like a rock, he stood like a rock, he breathed like a rock. He came to me for help with his posture, but my work was not about teaching him how to sit and stand. My work was about teaching him that he had the capacity to be something other than a rock, to create for him opportunities for different experiences of himself. I knew that if he gained the ability to sense even one thing about himself, maybe just the way he breathes, and then had an experience of himself doing that one thing in a way that wasn't like a rock, he would begin to know himself differently. He would begin to perceive the world around him differently. He would develop a different process for preparing himself for being in the world. About a year ago, I started going to Agape International Spiritual Center, and I remember hearing Reverend Michael Bernard Beckwith talking about the difference between that which is natural to us as perfect, whole, complete spiritual beings in the midst of a human experience, as opposed to that which can come to feel normal to us, or the ways of feeling and behaving that we can get accustomed to in the middle of our circumstances. And I thought, you know, this sounds a lot like the Feldenkrais method. But because movement is our tool in this work, because movement is our entryway into experience, what we'll focus on in this series is the difference between movement that is natural to your design and ways of moving that maybe aren't so natural, but have come to feel normal to you. Or the difference between what your intelligent body is designed for and how you've gotten accustomed to using yourself in the world. And this distinction can be difficult to make. If you do something often enough or long enough, it'll start to feel normal to you, no matter how unnatural it is. If I hold my shoulders up around my ears, is that natural? Is that an easy and pleasurable use of myself and gravity? I'm going to be more clear as we go on about exactly what I mean by natural. But for now, I'll just say that holding my shoulders up around my ears takes extra effort. If I do it often enough, however, I won't notice the effort so much. Just like you don't notice the feeling of your clothes against your skin unless you have a reason to pay attention to it. If I do it long enough, often enough, this shoulders up around my ears posture will become part of how I know myself. It'll start to feel normal, no matter how unnatural it is. And if I never experience anything else, how will I ever know that something else might feel better? That nature might have an easier, more pleasurable way? With this first lesson, we're going to begin rolling around in some of nature's possibilities. I'm going to lead you through a carefully structured series of gentle, repetitive movements. You'll move slowly and with awareness, keeping your attention focused on what you sense in your body as you move. What this will enable you to do is to develop a picture of what is normal for you. And I'll direct your attention as I guide you through the lesson, encouraging you to sense, attend to, and use parts of yourself that you may not normally sense, attend to, and use. Through my direction and the constraints of the lesson, you'll be led to explore the many different ways of moving, sensing, and attending that are also possible for you. And because you are a self-organizing, self-correcting, highly intelligent organism, somewhere between what is normal for you and what's possible for you, what's most natural for you will emerge. It's important to be gentle with yourself as you move. This is an exercise. We're not going for the burn. You're looking to make distinctions. Distinctions between what is natural to you and what's normal for you. And you're looking to detect subtle shifts in how you move and know yourself as the lesson unfolds. Effort and strain only make distinguishing and detecting more difficult. There's a psychological law called the Weber-Fechner law. And basically, it says, in far more technical terms than I will use, that if I place a nickel in your empty hand, you will more than likely be able to feel the added weight of the nickel. But if you have an encyclopedia in your hand, and I put a nickel on top of the encyclopedia, you will more than likely not be able to feel the added weight of the nickel. First, you have to turn down the volume on your effort in order to turn up the volume on your ability to use your senses to make distinctions and detect subtle differences. I'm never going to ask you to do something that should hurt. If you feel pain, do less of whatever it is that you're doing. Go more slowly. Make the movement smaller. I'll be giving you many opportunities to rest, but if you need more rest than I give you, please rest whenever you like. People think that because the movements are so small and gentle that they don't need to rest. But the attention you'll be paying to the way you move may require a quality of attention that you're not accustomed to. So even if your muscles aren't tired, your attention needs a break. And your brain needs a chance to process all the information you're taking in, a chance to process all the distinguishing and detecting. When my computer needs a moment for processing, it flashes a little hourglass icon that tells me I'm just going to have to wait before putting any more information into the system. You need to give yourself time for processing as well. I'll be the little icon that reminds you. Let's begin.